Welcome back to Crash. Are you ready? This is your host, George Whitehurst Perry, and today we are honored to welcome Dr. David Resnick in our continuing series about the HIV/AIDS scam. Dr. Resnick is one of the growing number of distinguished scientists who, like the little boy in The Emperor Has No Clothes, believed only what he saw and said when he saw the king naked, "The king, look at the king, look at the king. The king is as naked as the day that he was born." Dr. Resnick, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
All right. And it is such a pleasure to do this series of interviews with such distinguished scholars. Listeners, let me read to you some of the qualifications of Dr. Resnick here. I'm reading from his own website, which is davidresnick.com. There's a link on my website, which of course is hearitonline.com, in today's guest section. You can go to hearitonline.com and click on the link, or go to davidresnick.com. That's davidresnick.com. And I would urge all of my listeners to do so and get the facts about the HIV/AIDS scam. Now, here, reading from the bio, David Resnick, areas of expertise, AIDS, arthritis, cancer, proteases in emphysema and parasites, drug design, clinical diagnostics. Things I'm proud of: founded several biotech companies, synthesized the first peptidyl fluoromethanes. These molecules are biologically stable inhibitors of cysteine proteases used around the world in the development of therapies for the tissue-destroying diseases of arthritis, cancer, and parasites, among others. And if I am not pronouncing some of these names correctly, please forgive me, Dr. Resnick, because my background is not in science. But I continue. Now, this is truly fascinating, and I'd like to ask you some questions about the theory of cancer that you've worked with later on in the program with Dr. Duesberg on, as opposed to the so-called mainstream theory on cancer. And I continue reading. Since 1996, Peter Duesberg and I have produced a wealth of experimental and theoretical evidence supporting Theodore Boveri's 1914 chromosomal imbalance and euploidy theory of cancer. We have demonstrated that the autocatalyzed progression of aneuploidy is carcinogenesis. Participated as a member of the Presidential AIDS Advisory Panel of South Africa, initiated by President Thabo Mbeki. Invented date analysis, the first quantitative theory of biological change. Date comes from differentiation, adaptation, transformation, evolution. It is an extension of my theoretical work on aneuploidy theory of cancer. Now, I continue reading a short bio. David, this is reading from Dr. Resnick's own website here. Quote, David says, "I received my Ph.D. in chemistry from Georgia Tech in 1978. I have a B.S. degree in biology and chemistry. I have 25 years experience with proteases and protease inhibitors and worked 20 years in the pharmaceutical industry developing protease inhibitors for tissue-destroying diseases, cancer, emphysema, arthritis, parasitic diseases." Quote, "I began my professional career at Abbott Laboratories in 1978, where I helped establish the chemistry group in the diagnostics division. I left Abbott in 1980 to become one of the founders of Enzyme Systems Products and Prototech. In 1993, I was senior scientist for Kepri Pharmaceuticals, which was acquired by Eris Pharmaceuticals. I left Eris in 1996 and went across the bay, where I worked closely with Professor Peter Duesberg at the University of California at Berkeley for 10 years, on the aneuploidy theory or chromosomal imbalance theory of cancer. Currently, I'm Chief Science Officer at the cancer diagnostics company I founded called Chromosome Diagnostics, LLC. As an extension of my theoretical work on the aneuploidy theories of cancer, I invented DATE analysis, which stands for differentiation, adaptation, transformation, evolution. DATE analysis is a general theory of biological change, bridging the gulf between genotype and phenotype. DATE differs from metabolic control analysis, on which it is based, in that its essential task lies in the comparison of related phenotypes rather than in the precise definition or description of each. I'm also former president of Rethinking AIDS, and we will continue after the break with Dr. Raznick.
It's all together, the very least the king has.
The inauguration, not the.
All right, we're back with Dr. David Raznick. And Dr. Raznick, I'd like to play this ad we had made up. We had some fun making this ad after I had what was intended to be a discussion rather than a debate, a point-counterpoint with Dr. Leonard Horowitz, who is a DMD, a dentist, and then Dr. Peter Duesberg, who is, as Robert Gallo said himself, considered to be the world's leading authority on retroviruses. And we had some basic questions, which I had in what I thought was a logical progression. And I was going to ask the series of just three simple questions to both sides, and then give equal time for response. And the first question was, the threshold question for me was, can a retrovirus cause human immune deficiency? Because as Dr. Peter Duesberg pointed out, retroviruses are the most harmless group of viruses known to exist. And they are actually passed from mother to child. So Dr. Duesberg said that basically if a retrovirus could cause human immune deficiency, we wouldn't be having the interview. Well, instead of that format, well, then if question number one, the answer is no, a retrovirus cannot cause human immune deficiency, then we need not ever get to question number two, which was, if a retrovirus could cause human immune deficiency, where did the retrovirus come from? Well, the alternative theory was it came from Africa, from monkeys or apes or whatever, as opposed to the alternative theory that it was invented in a lab in, say, Fort Detrick, Maryland. The upshot was that Dr. Duesberg got very little time because instead of the series of questions, Dr. Horowitz read a so-called indictment basically accusing Dr. Duesberg of conspiring, no less, with Robert Gallo, who got millions of dollars as a result of the so-called discovery of the HIV virus, whereas all of Dr. Duesberg's funding was cut off from that day to this, Dr. Duesberg says that Robert Gallo still gets $30 million a year just in federal grants alone. And then Dr. Duesberg came out and said, excuse me, Robert Gallo, a retrovirus cannot cause human immune deficiency. Well, we had so-called indictment by Dr. Horowitz, who said, basically accused Dr. Duesberg of conspiring with no less than Robert Gallo to invent the HIV virus in the lab and basically kill millions of people. So, John, could you play the ad that we made after that so-called indictment?
This is George Whitehurst Berry, your host for CRASH. Are you ready?
I, Dr. Leonard Horowitz, I do hereby indict you, Dr. Peter Duesberg, for the deaths of millions of people worldwide through your role in the creation of AIDS.
Dr. Peter Duesberg, are you a mass murderer?
I'm afraid I'm not quite that powerful. I think Dr. Horowitz must have seen Dr. Strangelove once too many times. The retroviruses are the most harmless viruses that we know.
This is George Whitehurst Berry, your host for Crash, Are You Ready? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the most controversial program on the Genesis Communications Network. Find out why. Visit our website at www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
All right. And with that, Dr. Resnick, what led you to question the so-called official theory of Robert Gallo that a retrovirus can cause human immune deficiency?
Well, excuse me. When I started, I moved to California in 1980. That's when AIDS popped up. It wasn't called that then, of course. And I wanted to work on it because it was a very unusual disease, apparently. That was primarily in gay men and drug users. And I wanted to get involved in this, and I was, as you pointed out earlier, as mainstream as you can get, making inhibitors for various enzymes and various diseases. And I wanted to do the same thing for AIDS, but nobody knew what was causing AIDS. And then, of course, in 1984, Robert Gallo said it was one of his retroviruses that caused AIDS. So then I started looking into the enzymes that retroviruses have, and began designing inhibitors for the proteases that retroviruses have. But unfortunately, around 1985, certainly by 1987, it was very clear that AIDS itself was not a contagious disease. I mean, it was, to this day, 8 out of 9 AIDS cases are men, and 60% are gay men. There's no virus that knows whether you're gay or straight, for example, white or black, rich or poor.
Exactly. And let me just interject this. Of course, you know, we interviewed Dr. Charles Geschechter yesterday, who pointed out that Africa, the theory is that it's heterosexually transmitted. So how could you possibly have an infection vector, which was those must be incredibly bright selective retroviruses if it could be heterosexually transmitted in Africa and yet primarily homosexually transmitted in the United States and the West. I mean, this is the theater of the absurd.
That's right. Also, the other thing that I found out in 1985, talking with some retrovirologists that were working at UCSF in San Francisco, none of them had ever been able to obtain HIV from a human being. And to this day, that is still the case. Nobody has ever obtained the supposed cause of AIDS from a human being. So when you have all of these problems with the theory, it's not contagious, it's not sexually transmitted, it's not caused by a retrovirus, it stays within it's primarily a male phenomenon, and so on and so forth. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense.
In other words, it sounds to me like, as a layman, when you just list those points after point, the bottom line is it's not a theory. It certainly isn't a scientific theory.
It's dogma.
It's utterly, yeah. It is religion, and so what we're dealing with here, whatever it is, in my opinion, is not science. You worked in the drug industry. For the listeners who are not familiar with what protease inhibitors do, how do they interfere with viral function? We'll take that up after the break.
The king is in the all together, but
all right, we're back with Dr. David Resnick. And Dr. Resnick, as we were going into the break, we were asking about the function of protease inhibitors. How do they interfere with viral function?
Well, I mean, most viruses have at least one protease that their tiny little genomes code for that allow the virus to replicate.
Okay.
Retroviruses, for example, do. The flu virus does, cold viruses, most viruses do. So the idea is, you inhibit this enzyme and you will, there's no question about it, you will stop the replication of that virus. And if the virus truly caused disease, you would have a treatment for that disease. Unfortunately, the HIV protease inhibitors, they are excellent HIV protease inhibitors, by the way, some of the most potent inhibitors I've ever seen in my life. But
were these the ones that you yourself were helping to design, correct?
I did not design these. I don't have that on my conscience,
okay.
Thank goodness.
The
ones that are on the market right now that are used to treat AIDS patients, I know a lot of the people who did make those inhibitors.
Okay.
They're good people. Unfortunately, they don't stop the disease. They have, as far as I can tell, no therapeutic benefit to the people taking these drugs, but they have documented some various levels of toxicity, some of which are quite severe and even lethal.
Okay, so now let's clarify and zero in on this. In your bio, it says, of course, founded several biotech companies and then synthesized the first peptidyl fluoromethanes. These molecules are biologically stable inhibitors of cysteine proteases used around the world in the development of therapies for the disease-destroying, the tissue-destroying diseases of arthritis, cancer, and parasites, among others. So now the protease inhibitors that you were working on, were those a different class which
yes.
were dealing with not dealing with viruses or retrovirus specifically, or were they?
Right. There are four classes of proteases. There's the serine, the cysteine, the metallo, and the aspartyl. They're like different types of cars, for example, like Volkswagens, BMWs, and things. The retroviruses have what's called an aspartyl protease. My inhibitors are not effective against the aspartyl protease. I could have made some.
Okay.
For that, but I didn't. These peptidyl fluoromethanes are specific for the cysteine protease. Some viruses do have cysteine proteases, for example, cold viruses do. But the cancer, emphysema, arthritis, and parasites use these cysteine proteases quite a lot for tissue destruction, and these protease inhibitors are very effective against those diseases.
Okay, now, but again, you said that you knew some good people who were, in many cases, friends of yours who were working on the HIV-specific protease inhibitors, and so therefore you are uniquely qualified to comment on the validity of the theory or the effectiveness of the treatment, and in your opinion, the treatment is, as you just said, what are they actually treating? If they've never found the retrovirus that causes human immune deficiency, and if these inhibitors would stop any, if there were a retrovirus, would stop, absolutely stop any possible retrovirus that could theoretically cause human immune deficiency. Then in other words, if a retrovirus could cause human immune deficiency, if such a thing were theoretically possible, and as again I repeat, as Dr. Duesberg said, if such a thing had already existed, we wouldn't be having this interview, because retroviruses are so benign, they're passed from mother to child. But setting that aside for a moment, if theoretically some retrovirus could cause human immune deficiency, the protease inhibitors specific to that retrovirus would have already prevented its replicating, and we wouldn't have any more AIDS epidemic if it were caused by a retrovirus. Am I correct?
That's absolutely true. In fact, I was at a Gordon conference on proteases and protease inhibitors in the early 90s, where Roche presented the data of its first HIV protease inhibitor, and that's when I first saw how potent these things are. And they also presented clinical trial data that was not published, but they discussed it at this conference, where these very, very powerful HIV protease inhibitors had absolutely no clinical benefit to those patients. And in fact, and they brought up that very conference, an ad hoc explanation for the failure, saying that the HIV protease mutated to an inhibitor-resistant form.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Could you please repeat that? Because sometimes it just gets a bit much. I just broke out laughing when you said that. Could you please repeat what you just said?
Yeah. I actually have this on my website. People can look at it, plus a paper I published criticizing the mutation hypothesis of HIV protease, why these inhibitors don't work. But at the conference, again, at the Gordon Conference in the early 90s, where they presented these very, very potent HIV protease inhibitors, they also presented clinical data of their total inability to produce any clinical benefits to the patients. And to this day, there is still no clinical study, whatever, anywhere in the world, in the scientific literature, showing that people that take any of these anti-HIV drugs live longer or at least better lives than a similar group of people not taking the drugs. That's true to this day.
Absolutely. And we interviewed Dr. Bauer in a series of with a series of interviews in which he showed the absolute statistical absurdity of the whole HIV causes AIDS theory. There's no correlation in that way, nor in any other way. There's no infection vector because there's no correlation between the diagnoses of AIDS and HIV geographically. The vast majority, as he says, statistically, of HIV diagnoses are in the big cities. The vast majority of the AIDS diagnoses are in the rural areas in the deep south. So how in the world could you have an infection vector, as we briefly talked about yesterday and more extensively with the interviews with Dr. Bauer? You have extensive background. What in this, you are uniquely qualified to comment on this, but when you said to your peers, look at the king is as naked as he was born, when the standard theory kept holding up the magic suit, what happened to you personally? Of course, we know the penalties for Dr. Duesberg for speaking the truth were very, very severe, as we've talked about previously. What happened in your experience?
Yeah, it was a very interesting phenomenon. I had known many scientists before the advent of AIDS, and I'd been a professional scientist collaborating with many people, and, of course, I'd been collaborating for 4 years when I first moved to California with a number of scientists in the Bay Area. And in 85, when I first started having doubts about the HIV hypothesis of AIDS, naturally I would discuss this with my colleagues. And early on, it was reasonable discussions. In fact, the reason I became skeptical of the contagious HIV hypothesis was from these discussions and what my colleagues told me from their own work. And I kept looking into it, and then finally I concluded that it was all wrong. And then at some point, my colleagues started keeping me at arm's length. I've lost friends, professional opportunities, job opportunities, collaborations fell by the wayside. And some of the colleagues that I collaborated with for a long time with these protease inhibitors, especially in the area of parasites, in order for us to continue to work together, we just mutually agreed not to talk about AIDS. And that's just the tip of the iceberg.
Well, again, we'll hold that thought and continue with thought after the break here in the final segment of our program. All right, we're back with Dr. David Rasnick, and we had somehow through some process when I was going to interview Dr. Duesberg for the first time. He's since been back on the program, the first time with the point counterpoint intended to be discussion with Leonard Horowitz. Somehow it got posted all over the net, and the language used was spin language, the terminology used was HIV denier Duesberg to appear on Crash. Are you ready tomorrow morning? And I looked at that language, and I formulated a response, which I published on my own, or had my webmaster publish on my own website, which for those of you who are familiar with the fact that Copernicus in his first edition said, really basically cited Aristarchus. It wasn't really my idea, Copernicus said. Aristarchus gave me the idea that the Earth revolved around the Sun. Now, in the second edition, he deleted, Copernicus deleted the reference to Aristarchus and then took credit for the discovery himself. Later on, after Aristarchus had formulated his theory, the correct theory, Claudius Ptolemy came along and said, the sun revolves around the earth, and the church, of course, was very much supportive of that because it made human beings the center of the universe, so supposedly. My response was, privately, through the centuries, there must have been some wise people that privately thought that Aristarchus was correct. If they spoke the truth, they could be subjected to severe penalties of heresy and possibly being burned at the stake. But if they were going to call Dr. Duisberg an HIV denier, my response to that was Aristarchus was a Ptolemaic denier. In the language of the newspeak that they're so fond of, the spin language they're so fond of using. This theory is absolutely fascinating, and I'm reading from your website. Since 1996, Peter Duisberg and I have produced a wealth of experimental and theoretical evidence supporting Theodore Boveri's 1914 chromosomal imbalance and aneuploidy theory of cancer. We have demonstrated that the auto-catalyzed progression of aneuploidy is carcinogenesis. So, Dr. Rasnick, you had the privilege of working with a mass murderer for years, correct?
No, I've had the privilege of working with Peter Duisberg, who's probably saved far more lives than all of the AIDS establishment put together.
I just wonder how it felt to work with a mass murderer all those years. So we've had plenty of fun with that one on this series of interviews. Dr. Duisberg, of course, as we mentioned previously, Robert Gallo himself says that Dr. Duisberg is the world's leading authority on retroviruses. So this is an absolutely fascinating theory. How does the aneuploidal theory differ from the so-called mainstream theory of cancer, and what evidence is there in favor of the aneuploidal theory of cancer?
Well, there's not a lot of time left to really go into this. This is really a whole topic all by itself. It's basically,
well, we can invite you back.
Yeah.
If
you don't mind, to do it justice, yeah, I'd rather get back to a couple of points I'd like to make about this AIDS business.
Certainly.
All right. The thing that I really have been touting pretty strongly, certainly since the conference in South Africa with President Thabo Mbeki in 2000, is that we have to outlaw these HIV tests. They have to be outlawed. And we have to outlaw the anti-HIV drugs. The reason we have to outlaw both of these is that neither the test nor the drugs do any good. They're very harmful. In fact, they're lethal. The tests are lethal because when a person comes back HIV positive, then they give them these drugs, and these drugs are lethal, and they kill people. And you don't have to take my word for it. The inserts that come with the drugs themselves, this I'll quote from just four of them. GlaxoSmithKline, an anti-HIV drug, nucleoside analog. Quote, "At this time, there is no evidence that Zyogen will help you live longer or have fewer of the medical problems associated with HIV and AIDS. In Merck's protease inhibitor, Crixivan, it says this in the insert, quote, "It is not yet known whether Crixivan will extend your life or reduce your chances of getting other illnesses associated with HIV. And Boehringer Ingelheim's Virimmune, quote, says, "At present, there are no results from controlled clinical trials evaluating the effects of Virimmune on the incidence of opportunistic infections or survival." And finally, Glaxo's combination anti-HIV drugs called Combivir says, quote, "There have been no clinical trials conducted with Combivir." So even the manufacturers of these anti-HIV drugs acknowledge in the inserts that come with these drugs that there is no evidence that it does any good whatever. And all of the scientific papers, the clinical trials that are published, not a single one of them shows that people live longer or better lives on these drugs than a similar group of people not taking these drugs. And these drugs are killing people.
Are these drugs benign? Is they're not if they're not doing any good, how are they? Are these all protease inhibitor class type drugs?
No.
Okay. How do they? How do these drugs work?
Most of these drugs are what are called nucleoside analogs. They're designed to stop DNA synthesis. They're DNA chain terminators that designed in the 60s as cancer chemotherapy. They all come with black box warning labels, which is the most severe warning that the FDA requires before they pull the drugs off the market. That's how dangerous these drugs are.
Okay, so now, in other words, these are the successors to AZT, which was designed to prevent DNA replication?
That's
these
right.
Drugs?
That's absolutely correct.
Okay, now, is it fair to say that if you have a drug which is guaranteed to prevent DNA replication, that by taking the drug, you are guaranteed to get acquired immune deficiency syndrome?
That's true. I mean, these drugs, this is such a scandal now. Peter Duesberg and I predicted the drug-induced AIDS as a consequence of all these anti-HIV drugs. And in fact, there's a huge literature on what's called immune reconstitution syndrome, which is just a euphemism for anti-HIV drug-caused AIDS. If you, in fact, the leading cause of death among HIV-positive Americans since the late 1990s is liver failure due to the toxicity of these drugs. And immune reconstitution syndrome produces the exact same clinically defining AIDS diseases that the CDC came up with before there were any HIV drugs. They cause Kaposi's, MAC, TB, Cryptococcus, pneumocystis, cranii, pneumonia, a whole list of AIDS-defining diseases. IRS is not called AIDS because it only appears after a person starts taking the anti-HIV drugs within weeks to months. If it weren't for that, it would be called AIDS.
Okay, so in other words, this whole class of drugs is to prevent DNA replication. That's not a side effect. That's not an unintended consequence. Preventing DNA replication is what these drugs were designed to do. Now, if a drug is specifically designed to prevent DNA replication, as a layman, I would say that's acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
It does. It destroys the immune system.
So if it's guaranteed to destroy the immune system, does it not become a self-fulfilling prophecy? The patient died. We did everything we could by giving him these wonderful drugs.
That's why the drug industry says that they don't cure anybody with these drugs. All they do is delay their death, you see, basically. That's what they're claiming. Because people still who take these drugs still die of the exact same AIDS-defining diseases plus other diseases caused by the drugs, all of which are caused by these drugs.
Well, again, if they're preventing DNA replication, it would be fair to say, would it not, that they're hastening the deaths?
They are. They absolutely are. These drugs are killing people.
Well, Dr. Resnick, we're unfortunately out of time. Thank you so much for being on the program. I certainly would like to invite you back on to discuss more of this issue, as well as the fascinating theory of cancer that you and Dr. Duesberg worked on together. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Because nobody wanted to appear a fool.